Hello, everybody, and welcome to Lady Killers, a podcast about female serial killers. I am your host, Abraham Archambeau. Let's go dig up some bodies. Hope everybody's doing well out there. I am coming to you from a hotel room in Twin Falls, Idaho, where I've just spent the past couple of days at the Twin Falls Sandwiches Film Festival, where I had a feature-length horror screenplay in there by the name of Loon Lake. And good news, pretty excited that it did win the best horror screenplay at the festival. During a romantic anniversary getaway to the mountains of Oregon, a devoted wife discovers what her husband truly is. That is Loon Lake. It is available to purchase as a paperback or download it on Amazon right now. So if you're wanting to read a horror thriller before the film actually comes out next year, go ahead and head over to Amazon and check out Loon Lake. I've really enjoyed my stay here in Twin Falls. Very scenic, very beautiful. The people were very nice, and the festival went smoothly. Actually, pretty promising in the horror world is that a film won that was a horror film by the name of Animal Among Us, directed by John Woodruff. And it's pretty good news for the horror genre because we're up and coming. So look out for us. We're on the way there. Anyway, let's move forward into Lady Killers. It is going to be my new podcast about women serial killers. And what I would like to do is pick a new lady killer every week. I want to pick a woman, or lady killer, if you will, from a different state for each episode of the podcast until we've worked our way through all 50 states. And as I mentioned before, I am in Twin Falls, so that is very fitting as to the person that I'll be doing this week. Coincidentally, the final resting place of our first woman serial killer is here in Twin Falls. I went and visited her grave during a break in the festival and wanted to try to get a vibe going, get into that horror zone, get the cemetery around me, try to get a feel for this horrible, horrible woman who went by a couple names like the Black Widow or the Husband Killer. If you don't know who it is, our Lady Killer of the Week is Lyda Southard. She's representing the state of Idaho. There are a couple reasons that I chose her as our first Lady Killer. One, obviously, I am in Idaho, so it helps to be able to go around to some of the places that I found out as I did my research, see where she lived, and just see if I could get some sort of vibe, just like at the cemetery, to see why she did what she did. It's very hard to tell. She seemed to have a fairly normal childhood growing up. But you never know. You never know what's going to send somebody over the edge, and just you're never going to know why somebody snaps at all. She is buried, actually, at the Sunset Memorial Cemetery in Twin Falls, but she's under the name Anna E. Shaw. She was born, actually, as Lyda Anna Mae Trueblood. She was born on October 16th, 1892 in Catesville, Missouri. That's a town that's about 60 miles northeast of Kansas City. Like I said, I didn't learn much about her childhood. It seemed like things were okay. You know, a lot of the times, those early days is the developing time for these serial killers. A lot of things happened to them that caused them to go over the edge. But as far as I saw, everything was fairly normal. They were living in Missouri, and in 1907, the family decided to move from Missouri to Twin Falls after someone in their family, I'm assuming it was one of the parents, saw a photo of a man holding an apple, and it was the size of a cantaloupe. They saw this as a prosperous, hopeful image, So they packed up the family, her and her six siblings, and they headed to Twin Falls. And when they arrived, she was about 15 years old, and that's where her journey would begin. It seemed that people talked a lot about Lyda's looks. She was beautiful, most accounts that I saw. She's very, very pretty, and she was always one of the most popular girls in her school. And going through most of my reading, I found out she was a favorite child of her parents. She had a bright future set right in front of her, so I'm not sure why she decided to snap. But that's something we're going to dig into here, and maybe we can try to figure it out as we dive into this episode. This would all change when she got married on March 17th, 1912, to a family friend, a man by the name of Robert C. Dooley. Now, at that time, she was 21 years old, which is a little old for that time period. Most women were starting a family a lot younger than that. And it seems like Lyda just took her time. Maybe she enjoyed her young life until she had found the right man to marry. But as we dig in deeper, we're going to see probably she was probably just biding her time and starting to plan some of these things that we're about to hear. So the man she married was from the Dooley clan, which was friends with her family. They went way back to Missouri together. They used to hang out together. So Lyda and Robert, they got married and moved into a farm outside Twin Falls, Idaho. And they needed help with the farm. It was pretty big for just them two. So Robert's brother, Ed Dooley, he joined them and was going to help doing what you do around a farm. And everything, it just seemed to be progressing normally those first couple of years. And then in 1914, Lyda gave birth to her baby daughter, Lorraine. It didn't take long after Lorraine was born for things to start to unravel for the family. And this is where Lyda began her journey to the dark side. In 1915, things started to unravel for Lyda and her family. Her dark side started to come out. Her brother-in-law, Ed, took out an insurance policy on himself in 1915, and he named Robert and Lyda as the beneficiaries. Now, as you'll see as we find out more about Lyda and all her doings, she might have talked him into taking out this insurance policy. I'm not exactly sure, but as you'll see, it's probably a pretty good chance that she talked him into getting that insurance policy. Not long after he took out that insurance policy, he became very sick and he died shortly thereafter. Now, at that time in Twin Falls, people were dying from typhoid, gastroenteritis, influenza, diphtheria. You know, that was all common. It was all happening on a regular basis. So Ed's death didn't really raise any suspicions at that time. So Robert and Lyda returned to Missouri with Ed's body because they wanted to bury him in Missouri around the family. You know, the cemetery plot there was for the Dooley family, and so they took his body back there. Also, while they were there, they collected the insurance money, which was for $2,000. Now, if you adjusted that for inflation, we're looking at about 50 grand. In today's money, which is not a bad chunk of change at the, you know, for newlyweds with a new baby girl. It seemed like everything was going perfectly for Lyda and Robert. Not long after the death of Ed, though, Robert decided to take out his own insurance policy, and his wife Lyda, obviously, he listed her as the beneficiary. And it seems though the death of his brother Ed probably prompted him to take this action. You know, fascinated by serial killers and all their manipulation of us normal folks. So I'd like to think that Lyda is the one that talked Robert into taking out that policy. That's my romantic side, if you will. I think she just saw how simple it was to collect Ed's insurance money just like that. $2,000, no problem. You know, and it's probably where the wheels in Lyda's mind really just begin to turn, and she started to imagine how easy it could be to come up with some money. After they buried Ed in Missouri, Lyda and Robert and Lorraine returned back home to Twin Falls. And pretty much right after they returned back to Twin Falls, Robert fell ill and he died abruptly. Now again, Lida took his body back to the Dooley Ranch in Missouri for burial, but more importantly for the collection of the insurance money that was awaiting for her. This time it was for just over $2,500, which would be over $60,000 today. She is rolling in the dough at this point. And so she returned back home with her newly acquired riches and her little daughter, Lorraine, to live what looked like a comfortable life in Twin Falls. But back in Missouri, things were a little bit different for the father of those Dooley brothers. He started to become a little suspicious. Both of his sons died so shortly after taking out that insurance policy, with Lida being the beneficiary on both of them. I think he started to think a little bit about this woman. Who is she? What is she doing? How are these people dying around her? As he's thinking all this stuff, more suspicions were raised when Lorraine, the little girl, died shortly after their return to Twin Falls. Lida claimed it was from dirty well water on their property, and the authorities didn't think much about it since that was a common thing at the time, and she was such a young girl. Something like that is possible, and it could have happened to little Lorraine. But at the time, I think a couple people were a bit suspicious about Lorraine's death, especially after both Dooley brothers died just before that. But she had Lorraine buried very quickly in the Twin Falls Cemetery to cover up any wrongdoing. Lida couldn't stay single for long, apparently, because she ended up marrying William G. McAfee at the end of 1916. He went by the name Billy, and after they got married, she was still so grief-stricken over everything that had happened that she made Billy take her away from Twin Falls and all the horrible memories and all the death that was surrounding her at the time. They moved to Hardin, Montana. They settled down until, guess what? Billy came down with a mysterious sickness, and he died in October of 1918. His death was listed as a result of complications from influenza and diphtheria. I'm not sure anybody would have believed that had she been back in Twin Falls, but since she was in Hardin, Montana, it was a new life. She didn't know anybody, so, you know, like I said, at that time, people were dying from a simple flu. And so a death like that, it wouldn't raise too many suspicions. But Lida was getting homesick, so she traveled with Billy's body back to Twin Falls, and he was buried next to Little Lorraine in the Twin Falls Cemetery. Now, with all the dirty work done, Lida returned to Montana to collect the insurance money for Billy. But upon arrival, she had found out that his insurance policy had lapsed, or something to that effect. As I was researching and trying to find out information, it seemed like there was an issue with the insurance money, and they decided she would not get any of the money. But Lida was very resourceful, and she found out that the ranch that they had owned in Montana was worth a little bit of money, so she decided to sell their ranch. As she did this, she was already meeting a new guy, an equipment salesman by the name of Harlan C. Lewis. They got married right away after meeting each other as well. They quickly settled down in nearby Billings, Montana, and Lida got to work planning her next attack. Within 4 months of them being married, Mr. Lewis became ill and he died from complications of gastroenteritis. She collected the insurance money for her third husband, if you're keeping track out there, and it was a whopping $12,000. Today, this would be worth about $175,000. So Lida was now entering new ground with that amount of money. I mean, at this point, it's safe to assume that she was intentionally offing her husbands to collect the insurance money. We know that because we know these backstories, but she's moving around so frequently, it's hard to keep track of her, and nobody knows who she is outside of Twin Falls. So it was working out perfectly for her. You know, this was now her career. This is how she was going to survive heading into the future. Now, the reason that we should know that Lida was doing this on purpose as her career is the planning that went into like hiding the death of her third husband. She had him buried in Billings, Montana, and then she returned to Twin Falls. The clincher here is that she returned to Twin Falls still using her second husband's last name, McAfee, which would be hiding the fact that she even had a third husband. And, you know, it's pretty sneaky if you ask me. She could get into Twin Falls, into town there. Everybody would, they'll start asking questions about you know, what happened to Billy. Why is he not with her anymore? And at that point, she could tell everybody he had passed away. They didn't need to know about this third husband that she, I can't say killed. Mysteriously died, I could say. Upon her arrival back into Twin Falls, she took up residence at the Rogerson Hotel, which is in downtown Twin Falls on Main. She gained employment at the Grill Cafe, waiting tables. But more importantly, she was waiting for her next victim. As I said before, she was someone that couldn't stay single for long. So she was a little more sinister than most serial monogamists out there. The people of Twin Falls that frequented the Grill Cafe all said that Lyda was a beloved member of the Twin Falls community. They all saw her as just a pleasant girl to be around. She was a huge asset to the cafe, according to all management and the owners there. Everybody just loved her company. So within a year of returning to Twin Falls, of course, Lyda had already found another man by the name of Edward E. Meyer. While she was waiting tables at the Grill Cafe, Edward was a regular, frequent guest of the cafe, so they hit it off, and they were married in August of 1920. Now, keeping track here, everybody put another tally mark down. This is Lyda's fourth husband in a total of 8 years, and she was only 27 years old at the time. And guess what? Within 1 month, Ed Meyer came down with a sickness. Most people thought it was food poisoning at that time. Everybody involved in it said it was food poisoning, and Lyda and the ranch hand both recovered very quickly, so they assumed it was food poisoning. But Ed, his was a little more severe, and it sent him to the hospital. The doctors seemed to have everything under control, and Ed began to heal very quickly. He was ready to get his life back to normal. But unfortunately, after a visit from his wife, Ed's health took a drastic turn, and he ended up dying right after that visit. Can you imagine? Everything's going great. The doctors are patching him up. Ed's ready to move on with his life. But Lyda decides to come give him a visit, and like a day later, he's dead. So, I mean, this had to be the beginning of the end for Lyda, as doctors immediately became suspicious of her. All the doctors and everybody around town all talked about how Ed was in peak physical condition. He was tough as nails, you know. After all this, it really wore him down, and he just was a frail, frail man. But he was a foreman on a ranch. He was in his, it just, like I say, he was in top condition. There's no way that a simple food poisoning could have taken him down. An amazing specimen that was Ed Meyer. Taken down by food poisoning, it wasn't heard of at that time. Everybody knew that he was the strapping man, and food poisoning could not have taken him down like that. And this is when the whispers and the rumors begin to go about town. Lyda was already a step ahead of everybody, though, and the funny thing, and I guess it's the smart thing that she did, was she declined the $10,000 payoff for the life insurance money, and she offered it instead to Ed's sister. You know, theoretically, this is diverting any attention away from Lyda, eliminating her as a suspect, and just everybody just saying that it was food poisoning and moving on with their lives. There was one man, though, the county prosecutor, Frank Stefan, who was not fooled. He instructed his deputy, Virgil Ormsby, and the sheriff, E.R. Sherman, to investigate and find proof that Ed Meyer was murdered. He didn't fall for the whole food poisoning gag. He knew the foreman on a ranch, top condition. You know, like I said, he was tough as nails. Food poisoning could not have killed somebody like that. So that county prosecutor, he wanted to make sure that they did all they could to see that this was murder. I mean, he knew it was murder. Other people might not have known it, and he was on to her. So the county prosecutor, he sent in orders. They were very, very extreme orders to exhume the body of Ed Meyer. And by the time they could even conduct a thorough investigation and find out what happened, Lyda had vanished into thin air. She was gone, already on the run. You know, I think she was already looking for her next victim. She was quick to put things in the past and move on. She never lingered for very long. She was already, you know, she would get married after meeting somebody, she'd be married in a week or, you know, whatever. She knew what she was doing. She was already on to, like I say, her next victim. So the deputy sheriff, Virgil Ormsby, he was kind of a family friend of Lyda's since she was a child. And so he knew some of the back alleys and backwoods places to look for Lyda. So, you know, he immediately went back to, you know, where she grew up in Missouri, backtracked all the way back there, and followed all of her marriages into Montana. And while he was in Montana, that's when he discovered Lyda's secret marriage to Harlan Lewis, the marriage that she tried to hide as she returned back to Twin Falls. And he also learned about his subsequent death. So then he went one more husband back from there to William McAfee and discovered his death as well. That is where pretty much I think Ormsby knew that Lyda was a dangerous serial killer. He went into the McAfee home, and this is where Ormsby found large amounts of fly paper containing arsenic, and it was down in the basement. And there was also a large pot, and it had a lot of arsenic residue on it. So he, you know, he looked at all this stuff, and it was concluded that Lyda was boiling fly paper in that huge pot, and she would obtain all the arsenic from that paper into water, and then she would use that arsenic-laced water to taint her husband's food. Now, this is where one of her nicknames came from, which is Flypaper Lyda. And as far as Ormsby was concerned, the puzzle pieces were all starting to fall into place. In Twin Falls, Sheriff Sherman ordered the exhumation of her first husband Robert's body, along with her brother-in-law and Lorraine, the little daughter. And it was concluded that everybody involved, except for Lorraine's body, contained arsenic. So a warrant was immediately issued for the arrest of Lyda. And, you know, Lyda was on the run at this point. And so authorities tried to follow her path, which led them down to Mexico and then back up to Los Angeles. And she was already at it again, meeting and marrying a chief petty officer in the Navy by the name of Paul V. Southard. Now, he was stationed in Hawaii, so they set sail, and they settled down on the island, far away from Lyda's checkered past. And I can see her thinking that she got away with one. She thought she was in the clear at this point. She fooled all those morons back in Twin Falls, and, you know, she probably started planning the death of Paul at this point as well, you know. New husband, that's what she does. But as I read a little bit further, I found out that Paul had an issue with his insurance policy. And he said he was fine with the policy that the military was giving him. He didn't need to take out any new policy. And this really, really just, you know, it messed up Lyda's plan. You know, because that's her MO, get married, talked them into getting an insurance policy, and then off them, but she couldn't do that with Paul. You know, she couldn't off him until she was definitely sure that there would be some money waiting for her on the other end, which there wasn't enough. The military was not giving a huge insurance policy to Paul, so they just stayed there and, you know, they just kind of waited it out. Before Lyda could move forward on the plan with Paul, she was arrested by local officials while they awaited the arrival of Deputy Sheriff Ormsby from the mainland. After taking her into custody, Ormsby escorted her to an awaiting ship to take her back home to face her demons and to face the consequences. While boarding the ship, you know, it was said that Lyda bowed and waved to all of her adoring fans that were out there, and they were just cheering madly for her in the crowd. And, you know, unfortunately, Lyda's crazed run seemed to be at an end. You know, she was delivered safely back to Twin Falls to her new home, the Twin Falls County Jail, where she would await her trial. Lyda's trial was a national sensation in 1921, and it even appeared on the cover of the New York Times. During that trial, she began to be called Lady Bluebeard, which I can only assume is named after Bluebeard the pirate, who murdered everybody. But it's just one of many nicknames that she had. And this trial lasted about 6 weeks, and it ended up with Lyda being convicted of second-degree murder and she was sentenced to 10 years to life in the state pen in Boise. And it only took about, I think it was 23 hours to reach that verdict. And they say Lady Bluebird just sat there expressionless as her fate was decided for her. Fast forward 10 years as Lyda sat and waited in her prison cell in Boise. After about the 10 years, she enlisted the help of a fellow male inmate by the name of David Minton. They hit it off, obviously, as, you know, Lyda was quite the charmer with men. She could talk them into anything, really. And Minton, he was almost ready to get out of prison, and when he finally was released, he went out immediately, got a car, and 3 weeks later, he returned on May 4th, 1931, to the state penitentiary in Boise, and he drove outside that prison, and he waited for Lyda outside the prison. Inside the prison, Lyda was in the middle of her planned escape from the penitentiary. She had already brainwashed another man, Jack Watkins, who was a prison guard, and he enlisted him to help her escape. Lyda cut the bars with a saw that Watkins had provided her, and another inmate sang loudly, and he played a phonograph to drown out the sounds of the sawing that Lyda was doing. After she finally sawed through those bars, she scurried down the prison wall on a ladder, and there were some torn blankets as well that were provided by Watkins. He had it all set up for her to escape, slide down that ladder, and hop into the car with Minton, who was waiting for her, and the two of them fled down to Denver. There was also a little side note that I wanted to mention. Jack Watkins, that prison guard that had helped her escape, he mysteriously died before she'd even made her grand exit, but his death was listed as natural causes. I mean, obviously, we know Lyda probably had something to do with his death as well. I mean, she had a lust for it at this point. She knew she was getting away with almost every man she came into contact with. She would marry and kill, collect the money. But I think after a while, she enjoyed the manipulation of people. And I think anybody that got in her way, she used them and then just tossed them out like trash. Pretty much right after they got into Denver, they parted ways. And it's funny, I got to thinking, why didn't Lyda marry Mr. Minton? I mean, that was something that she always did. And the more I thought about it, I guess there was no way she was going to get any money out of an ex-con. He wouldn't have any insurance money. So there wouldn't have been any reason for Lyda to get involved with him. You know, he was an ex-con, worthless in her mind, you know, because if you can't get money, you're worthless to her. You know, she just used him simply as a means of escape from prison. It seemed like she made him fall in love with her just so he could help her escape. The police caught up with Minton, though, and he immediately gave out the whereabouts of Lyda. He didn't even hesitate at all. He knew that Lyda had used him, and he was eager to send her back where she came from, back to that prison. So he told authorities where she went, pointed their way, and off they went. Now, while in Denver, Lyda had found a new target by the name of Harry Whitlock. Now, she had worked under him as a housekeeper. She had a way with men, so obviously she talked him into marriage. They eventually did get married, and that would have made him her sixth husband in a total of 20 years. Of course, 10 years of those were behind bars, so she had lost time, and she needed to make up for some of that. And this marriage only lasted about a year anyway, because the authorities soon caught up with her in Topeka, Kansas. She was recaptured in July of 1932, and she was sent back to her old cell in Boise after 15 months of freedom. It was learned later that Whitlock found out Lyda's true identity, all her violent past, and he's the one that called the police on her, actually. And once they interviewed him and got to discussing Lyda's past and all that and their marriage together, he recalled at one point that she did suggest he take out a life insurance policy. Of course, she was caught before he could do that and sent back to prison, but it's just, she never stopped doing it. She was always, always at work looking for a victim and looking for more insurance money to collect. So Lyda was sent back to Boise, and she did the remainder of her sentence until she was paroled in October of 1941. But apparently I found out even in prison she was treated like a princess. I mean, she had her way. She got whatever she wanted. She really got into the warden's head there, apparently. And he was allowing her to basically come and go from prison whenever she wanted to. And this all came out after she was released from prison, and that warden ended up resigning after all those allegations surfaced. And then she was officially pardoned in 1942. And by this point in the story, I think you all know what's going to happen next. You guessed it. Lyda married for the 7th time to a man by the name of Hal Shaw. Not a lot was known about this marriage. I looked all over, but I think people had lost interest in her at that time and didn't really report any of her new marriage. The funny thing is about Hal Shaw is he just disappeared into thin air. No trace, out of Lyda's life forever. And the authorities came in and they said that there was no link to Lyda, you know, in the disappearance of Shaw. But I think it's safe to say that she had something to do with it. At this point, she didn't care. I mean, she would kill anybody in her path. She got into your head and she would just take over. But at this point, it didn't really matter. I mean, the remainder of her life, she lived in obscurity. She finally did end up having a heart attack, which took her life on February 5th, 1958, in Salt Lake City, Utah. She was 65 years old. Now, we know that Lyda was exposed to a lot of arsenic. That's how she was killing her victims. And this prolonged exposure to arsenic was causing her to lose all of her hair. So she was not very pleasant to look at, according to all reports. And that might have been, you know, the biggest reason that she stayed out of the public eye and just laid low until her death. Karmic justice, man. That's just what happens. It caught up with her. And yeah, I looked up arsenic poisoning, exposure to arsenic. And apparently one of the biggest side effects is you lose all of your hair. And that's exactly what happened to Lyda. And so Lyda Trueblood, Dooley, McAfee, Lewis, Meyer, Southard, Whitlock, Shaw's hairless body was transported back to Twin Falls, where it remains buried today at the Sunset Memorial Park under the name Anna E. Shaw. Among the others that are buried near her are two of her former husbands, her daughter, and the man who finally brought her to justice, Virgil Ormsby, is buried in her vicinity. That is the story of Lyda Southard, the flypaper Lyda, Black Widow, Husband Killer, or Anna E. Shaw, or Lyda Trueblood, or Dooley, or McAfee, or Lewis, or Myers, Whitlock, Shaw, whatever you want to call her. I didn't know anything about her until I started doing research on this. I knew I was going to be going to Twin Falls, Idaho, so that's why I chose her. That's why I wanted to learn more about her, since I was going to be there anyway. And I even went and checked out the old state penitentiary. I wanted to see how she escaped, where, and it looked pretty easy to escape at that time. It's a lot harder now, but I was just so interested in someone like that. I mean, when you think serial killer, you think a slasher, somebody that's, you know, tying somebody up in their basement, slitting their throat, whatever happens, you know. I thought it very interesting that she did this all with arsenic, and it was something that was just available to her on flypaper. That's all she did. She boiled flypaper and used that laced water to kill people. The first episode of Lady Killers in the books. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, I am your host, Abraham Archambault. I hope you have sweet dreams.